I learned magic for 8 years. Went to La La Land. Worked for a while with rockets. Learned to fly with some hawks. Got stung by the hornets. And it all taught me how to be a wizard.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. In today's show, I'm going to be looking back at the Dynasty rookie ranks. I did them straight after the NBA draft. A little bit has changed with some of these due to some things that have happened in free agency and mainly in Summer League as well. So I'll be looking back at how those rankings have changed, gone through the top 72 rookies, in my opinion, for Dynasty Leagues. It's more for category leagues rather than points leagues. Points leagues change a little bit more. And of course, this is the case with the actual 2018 NBA draft as well. There were so many areas where players were really close together. You know, there was 5-6 guys who were in that same sort of zone. You didn't know which guy you wanted to take in that area necessarily. And that's sort of the way I feel here. And I'll detail that when I go through these ranks as to which player I look at and go, yeah, well, I'm not too sure about this. I could see this guy easily jumping ahead of these sort of players as well. So that's the way we're going to be looking at today's shows. Again, it's not, it's more just, yeah, these are the guys I think that over the next, you know, 4 or 5 years are going to be able to have the most impact. When I'm looking at rookie drafts in Dynasty Leagues, I'm not really looking too heavily at team build unless my team is a real contender. And then I might just grab a guy who's going to be able to be a complimentary piece. But generally, if you're a team that's contending, you're going to have a rookie draft pick in the 20s in that sort of a zone. So, yeah, those guys that you draft probably aren't going to have an impact for the first 2 to 3 seasons, meaning that you're drafting them to fit your team. Your team might be completely different in 2 to 3 years. So generally, I just try and get the best player, which is how I believe NBA GMs should be approaching most of the time when they're looking at the actual NBA draft. That's sort of the way that you should be looking at fantasy dynasty drafts as well. Michael Bolton?
Let's get to it.
All right. Let's start at the start. Not much has really changed in my top four ranks from when I did it about a month ago now. The number one player I've got on my Dynasty rookie ranks is Luka Doncic, who went to the Dallas Mavericks. We didn't see Doncic in Summer League. That doesn't change too much to me. I think he'll be a starter from day one, or at least playing starters minutes. He's got top 25 upside, in my opinion, not for this coming season, but for some point in the next 4 to 5 years. I think he's got a real chance and a significant chance of being a top 100 guy, probably even a top 80 guy as soon as this season. Nothing changes there for me. At number one, at number two, nothing changes for me there either. Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J, remains at pick number two. We saw him block a ton of shots in Summer League. We saw him hit a bunch of threes in some of the games. He wasn't as successful from three in every game that he played, but in that first Summer League game, knocked down 8 triples. He's got a massive upside. Another top 25 ceiling type of a player is Jaren Jackson Jr. He's at number three. Now, my big decision here, sorry, number two. My big decision came at pick number three in my dynasty ranks. I did go with DeAndre Ayton again. I wasn't overly impressed by Ayton at Summer League. He was really efficient, and that has a ton of use in fantasy leagues. Obviously, the lack of assists was not fantastic. The rim protection stuff is not great. He didn't look completely engaged. I still have my concerns with Ayton, but I am slotting him in there at number three, which is exactly where I had him beforehand in the Dynasty rookie ranks. The guy that I was debating putting at number three was Wendell Carter Jr., who I do have at number four. He has obviously risen up the ranks. I did have him at number seven beforehand. Yeah, he's jumped considerably. He was excellent in Summer League. I believe he has top 25 upside as well. He can pass, he can shoot, he can block shots, he can score, he can rebound. So he's jumped up 3 spots here to number 4. And again, it was a really tough decision for me to not have him at number 3. I do have pick number 3 in a dynasty rookie draft coming up, and I'm 99% confident that Luka Doncic is going to go 1 and Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to go number 2. So I'm going to be left with this decision between Ayton and Carter. And I don't actually know which way I'm going to go. At this point, obviously, I've got Ayton at 3. By tomorrow, I could very easily have Carter at 3. That's a decision I'm going to have to make when that dynasty rookie draft kicks off next week. And I don't know exactly which way I'm going to go, but I am at as of today, I'm leaning Ayton, but that is, there's a bee's dick in that between those two guys. They are really, really, really close there at 3 and 4 with Carter jumping up significantly and looked excellent on defense. I think he starts this season. I think he's a top 100 player this season, and I think he's got top 25 peak ceiling, which would be an excellent investment as a dynasty player. To be honest, I think Ayton does have that top 25 upside as well. Think back to what Enes Kanter was able to do when he was on the Thunder, when Durant was injured and he was playing alongside Russell Westbrook. Kanter was putting up consistent top 30 numbers. Big scoring, big rebounds, super efficiency. And Ayton is not a great defender, but he's a better defender than what Kanter is, and he's a better shot blocker than what Kanter is. So that means that he does have that top 25 upside if it all comes together. So I think that all four of those guys, Doncic, Triple J, Ayton, and the Block Panther, Wendell Carter Jr., they all have top 25 upside. Doesn't mean they'll all get to top 25, but I think their peak ceiling is getting to that top 25 level. Let's go on to the next list. Trae Young comes in at number 5. He did slide down one spot. That's sort of in response to the way he struggled a bit at Summer League, but mainly in response to the way that Wendell Carter played. So he jumped ahead of Trae Young. I think that Young is going to be the starter in Atlanta this season. No Dennis Schroeder, Jeremy Lin still coming off that knee injury. So Young is going to be a field goal percentage issue, no doubt. He gets assists, he gets steals, he'll hit threes, he'll score, and he shoots a great free throw percentage. It's going to be rough with efficiency, no doubt about that. And Young still does have some bust potential. I don't think he necessarily has the top 25 upside of those other guys, but I think he'll be able to put up consistent numbers for a pretty long time in the NBA, or at least the next 3 or 4 years. He'll be getting lots and lots of run. So unlike Kyle McEwen, who is not the biggest Trae Young fan, as you would have heard on the show last week, I have Trae Young there at number 5. Marvin Bagley remains at number 6, and I'm not 100% sure on this one. He was at number 6 in my initial ranks. He did not look good in Summer League, had an issue with his hip. He blocked more shots in Summer League, which gives me an element of confidence there, which was somewhat of a concern with him. His poor block numbers, poor steal numbers. His efficiency was shit house. I worry really about his defense. I think he's got a massive chance to be a bust. I hated the pick from him at number 2, but of course it's the king. So whatever the dumbest decision you can make is, they generally go ahead and make it. At 6, I still would go with Bagley, just, you know, hoping there is some upside there in him and he can get it figured out. But I'm not convinced on that. And if you wanted to say you wanted to have the guy at 7 or the guy at 8 or the guy at 9 ahead of Bagley, I understand that. I probably wouldn't let him slide any further than pick number 8 in a dynasty rookie draft. But at the moment, I've got him at pick number 6. At number 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mohamed Bamba. He does slide down a couple of slots there. It's mainly, again, because Carter jumped up. I could very easily put Bamba there back at number 6. He was at 5 initially, but Carter jumped up and took that spot. I could move Bamba ahead of Bagley. Bamba did his thing. He blocked shots. He didn't play a huge amount of minutes in Summer League. He still has concerns offensively. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a 30-plus minute guy, and I think if Bagley gets it figured out, he will be. I'm just not sure that Bamba gets to that level, but he very well could. And again, that's another one, like the Ayton Carter 3-4 decision I have to make. The Bagley-Bamba 6-7 could very easily swing the other way. And if you ask me that in 2 days' time and I really get back into it and look at it again, yeah, Bamba could have jumped up to 6 there. So those two guys are really close there. The biggest riser so far is at pick number 8, and that's my man Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who was excellent in Las Vegas. The Clippers backcourt, there's a lot of guys there. Patrick Beverley, Milos Teodosic, Lou Williams, Avery Bradley, they're their top 4 guards. Then you've got Juwan Evans, Sindarius Thornwell, Ty Wallace is still a restricted free agent. Gilgeous-Alexander is going to battle for minutes. He should get them. I think he will play as the 4th guard on this team. I think he will play over Teodosic. I think Beverley will start, but I think we might only get 27 minutes out of Beverley. I think we might get 26 or 27 minutes out of Avery Bradley, 28 minutes out of Lou Williams, and then a lot for Gilgeous-Alexander as well. I know Doc Rivers has issues with playing rookies. I'm not sure that that will necessarily carry over to Shea here. He was unbelievable at Summer League. The shooting is still not quite there, but he looked a bit more comfortable taking pull-up jumpers, gets to the rim whenever he wants. He has got massive, massive upside. He's got probably a top 60, top 70 type ceiling. Maybe even higher than that as we move forward. So he's the guy I'd have at 8. So he's jumped up pretty significantly based on him just looking dominant really in Summer League and looked like one of the best players there. So I've got him at pick number 8 in my Dynasty rookie ranks. Let's have a look at the next four guys. At pick number 9, it's McCall Bridges of the Phoenix Suns. He was previously at number 8, so he's dropped down a slot. It's not too much of a big deal. He racked up the blocks. He got the steals in Summer League. He's not going to be a high usage guy, so that probably reduces his overall upside. I don't necessarily think he's got any sort of star potential, but as a solid starter, he could be that guy for many, many years. Think in that sort of Rudy Gay fantasy mold, a guy that has his top 60 consistency, not as high a scorer as Gay, but gets steals and blocks and rebounds and hits threes and does it with really good efficiency as well. So McCall Bridges is there at number 9. DRC Zaire Smith remains at number 10. He didn't do much statistically at Summer League. He's going to be a little bit away from doing that sort of thing. But I think if we're looking at him, the reason I've got him at number 10, I think he's got really high star potential. He might not get there. There's an element of bust risk with him or him just never being a player that puts up big numbers. But when I'm at pick 10 in a dynasty draft, I want a guy that could maybe be a top 3 player in this group of guys. It could maybe be a top 25 type of guy, and that's the player that I think Smith could become. The percentage chance of him getting there is not necessarily that high, but he could get to that level. That's why I had him at 10, and that's why I continue to have him at pick 10. At pick 11, it's Michael Porter Jr. He had a second surgery on his back and his team is claiming it's a breakthrough medical treatment, which just sounds like a load of shit to me. They seem to think he's going to play this season. I will be fairly shocked if he does play at all this year. But much like DRC, taking Michael Porter here is like, hey, if it works out, I think this could be a steal at pick 11. I don't have full confidence in him getting to this level. I don't even have full confidence in him being a good fantasy player. Tunnel vision, poor defense, lack of defensive stats, efficiency could be a problem. But he could also be a 25-point-per-game scorer, which is obviously really valuable, unless your name's Andrew Wiggins. So I do think there is a risk there with Porter, but again, we're getting to pick 11. I think the upside there with him is there, but I could totally understand if a couple of blokes I've got underneath him you wanted to take ahead of him or even ahead of DRC Zaire Smith. I think Smith's ceiling is actually probably higher than Porter's, just given what value he can bring to the actual overall NBA. But Porter, that's why I've got him there. He might not play this season. Shit, he might not even ever play. That is a legitimate risk with Michael Porter, but I've got to go with him there at pick number 11. The biggest riser here, probably one of the biggest riser in this entire ranks, is pick number 12. It's Mitchell Robinson of the New York Knicks. He jumps up 16 spots. I think he's got top 60, top 70 type ceiling upside. He probably won't get there this year, but once Enes Kanter leaves, playing him alongside Kristaps Porzingis. In future seasons could really work. He could be a 3-block-per-game guy, a 10-rebound-per-game guy, a 65% field goal guy. You think Rudy Gobert, think Clint Capela, who are a comfortable top 50 players. Mitchell Robinson can get to that. So that's why for a guy that was picked in the second round, I'm taking him at pick number 12. I love that upside for Robinson. He doesn't need 30 minutes. Give him 24 minutes and he's already a top 100 player, I think, just by getting 2.5 blocks per game and 8 or 9 rebounds and 65% from the field, a la Clint Capela. So that's my top 12 guys in the Dynasty rookie ranks. Let's go on to the next four players. At pick number 13, it's Colin Sexton. He was at 13 pre-summer league. He's 13 now. A lot of people, this draft class, there's a lot of differing opinions. I was discussing with someone on Reddit yesterday who said that they'd take Sexton number 1 out of this entire draft class, which is absolutely wild to me, like wild. Sexton did get on the first team all Summer League. I didn't think he deserved it. I thought what we saw from him at Summer League is why I don't think he'll necessarily be successful in the NBA. He took a lot of shots. He was inefficient. He got no assists. He got no steals. He didn't hit threes. And it required him, much like when he was at Alabama, to just take a shitload of shots. I don't think he's going to have that opportunity in the NBA. I also will readily admit that my opinion of him is different to a lot of others, and people think that he's like, oh yeah, he makes an angry face when he's on defense, so that means he's going to be a good player. I know that's not what people think, but that is definitely a thing out there. Look how tuned in he is, and he can be a good defender. Doesn't get steals though, so that's not really helping us with fantasy. And the other thing that seems to be the prevailing narrative, which again, I could be wrong on this, very much so, whenever someone brings up Sexton, I say to them, why do you think he's going to be good? Is it the poor efficiency, low assists, low steals, low threes, low rebounds? And they say, he's going to be given the keys to the offense in Cleveland. And I don't believe that. Kevin Love is there. Kevin Love, from all reports, isn't getting traded. George Hill is there. Jordan Clarkson, he's never met a shot he doesn't like. J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver. These are, and you can say Cleveland, they need to rebuild. Of course they need to rebuild. We know that. But they haven't given any indication that they are. So people seem to think that from day one, Sexton's going to be in here playing 32 minutes a night with a 26% usage and taking every shot under the sun. And I don't believe that. Yes, Clarkson shit. I know Clarkson shit. I've been telling you this for a long time. George Hill is a solid enough veteran. He's no part of the future. J.R. Smith is old. Korver's potentially getting traded. Kevin Love is, you know, what he is, an excellent player who's now in a weird situation. I don't think Sexton is that good. And I think if they do trade away all these guys and give Sexton the starting job, he could be one of those guys whose first 2 years are by far the best years in his career. As the team starts to get better, he gets minimalized. Shout out to Michael Carter-Williams. So I'm not massive on Colin Sexton, but I readily admit that I could be way, way wrong on what he's able to do. Another guy who's definitely getting the summer league reach arounds is my number 14 player, and that's Kevin Fort Knox. He's jumped up 5 spots in my ranking, so I liked what he can do. We do give him the Kentucky benefit of the doubt, but I still worry that the no steals, no blocks, poor efficiency, which we all saw in summer league, even though those defensive numbers were a little bit up, they will continue on into the NBA, and he's not going to give a 33% usage rate. He's not going to be scoring 20 points per game in the NBA. Yeah, he could start, and I think he probably will, and probably play 30 minutes a night, and that might get him to be a top 100 guy, but will he ever be better than that? Will he ever bring any of these other parts of his game along? And that's where I have concerns with Kevin Knox. So I bumped him a bit. He's up to 14, and I could see him. You could put him ahead of Porter. You could put him ahead of Robinson or Zaire Smith or McCall Bridges. I could see all of that. You could put him ahead of Marvin Bagley if you wanted to. I get that. These are, you know, close decisions, but I'm still not totally sold on Kevin Knox based on what he did at Summer League. At 15, it's the other Bridges, Miles Bridges. He has dropped down quite a bit. He was okay at Summer League, but he still has some IQ-based issues on the court that make me think that, you know, him having long-term value as a starter maybe isn't there. It's not happening this year. Of course, Malik Monk, Nick Batum, Jeremy Lamb, they're the guys at the 2 and 3, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Marvin Williams at the 3 and the 4 as well. Bridges isn't going to be getting tons of minutes there. Dwayne Bacon played quite well, although Bridges should be ahead of him. I'm just not massive on Bridges, but again, this one could be way off. And then at pick 16, another second rounder, DeAnthony Melton. I think he's got top 80 upside. He's jumped 6 spots in my rankings, dominant at Summer League, generates steals, assists, rebounds, hit threes, scored, looked efficient, looks like an absolute steal at pick 46 in the NBA draft. It's not going to happen for him this year. Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, they're the 3 backcourt guys. Michael Carter-Williams, he's probably the 4th. Melton's the 5th one. 2 years' time, he's probably the 3rd guy in the backcourt, I believe, Melton. And putting up top 100 numbers in 28 minutes per night. And then when Chris Paul moves on, you talk 5 years down the track, this is a bloke who I think could be averaging 17, 7, and 7 with two steals. And that's obviously really valuable. That's a long way down the track. So that's one that you're looking at pick 16 there. Don't expect much initially. And some of the guys after him could produce more value immediately. But Melton's got that really significant long-term upside. Well, at least I believe he does anyway. So he is a pretty significant jump forward in the ranks. At number 17, a guy who I probably underrated a bit when I did my initial ranks, and that's Troy Brown of the Washington Wizards. I had him outside the top 30 originally. I've bumped him up to 17 here, so it's a big rise. I've been doing a little bit of work with some advanced metric stuffs and future projection stuff. I think he probably does have at some point a top 100 ceiling, a top 80 type of ceiling. The shooting's terrible. He was under 20% from three in summer league. His value comes from being able to handle the ball and pass, but he didn't generate many assists in summer league. You know, does he take on that backup shooting guard role where Jody Meeks is, although Austin Rivers probably has that now? Thomas Satoransky is still in the mix. Can he jump ahead of Kelly Oubre in a couple of seasons' time, who never really has seemed to be able to, you know, lock down a significant role or take big steps forward? Brown is one I'm a little bit skeptical on, but I think underrank him when I did it initially. At pick 18, it's Ali Okobo, who I do think will start games for the Phoenix Suns this year at point guard. Brandon Knight will start off there. Shaq Harrison has a massive chance as well to be a starter in Phoenix. But I think Okobo's ability to shoot, to defend, to get assists, to hit threes is going to make him a guy that does have a couple of top 100 seasons as a second round guy, and he could have some value for stretches this season come February or March. So I do like Ali Okobo at that same spot where I had him previously. Number 19 is Janan Musa. He's at 19. He was at 15 previously, so he's moved down a little bit as I've bumped up guys like Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox, De'Anthony Melton, Troy Brown. Those guys have bumped up, and that's pushed Musa down. And we didn't get to see Janan at Summer League. The Nets have brought in some threes and fours and fives that could potentially take away some of his initial minutes, but he's a guy that, based on some of the advanced stuff, projects out extraordinarily well. And I'm not 100% confident of this, but yeah, he's a guy that, you know, based on what I'm looking at, he's saying, yeah, top 30, top 40 upside at some point. The likelihood of him getting there is probably pretty low. But he scored whenever he wanted to, pretty much in Europe. He can shoot, he can drive. The defensive stuff needs quite a bit of work, but I think taking a flyer on a guy like Janan Musa here, on a team that's rebuilding and gets as much talent as possible in there, if he shows something in the next couple of years, he's going to have that opportunity. So I have got him at pick number, or at rank number 19, which is a little bit of a drop from where I had him at 15. But yeah, we didn't see him at Summer League. Maybe that's playing on my mind a bit. At number 20 is Josh Okogie for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think he's got top 90 upside. He has dropped a few spots here. Again, it's more due to the impressive performances of Melton and Robinson and Brown rather than him necessarily disappointing. He generated tons of defensive stats, but he's not going to play this season because Tom Thibodeau doesn't know what he's doing a lot of the time. So Okogie's not going to see the floor. It might take him 2 to 3 years to do that. But when he does, those defensive numbers are going to be unbelievably valuable for us in fantasy, and that's where a lot of his value is going to come from. Can the three-point shot come around? I guess that's the big question with him. But I like him there at pick number 20. Let's move on to the next four guys at number 21. Rock DJ. The Rock DJ, Robert Williams. He's dropped quite a bit. Not because of talent necessarily, because I still think he's got that talent, but because he just seems like an out-and-out dickhead. And that's part of it. Like, he had the talent. He slid in that first round because of these off-court concerns. He got drafted. He's missed phone calls. He's missed flights. He's lost his wallet twice already. Like, just get your bloody heads screwed on. Like, what's going on with this guy? He can still block shots. He can still finish. He can still have high efficiency with piss-poor free throw percentage. But the off-court stuff, the decision-making issues with the Rock DJ makes me think that he probably might not ever get to have a significantly large role. So that's why he has fallen down as much as he has. At number 22, it's the Shark, Bruce Brown, for the Detroit Pistons, a second-round pick of the Pistons. Injured last season at Miami and looked great in summer league, handled the ball, scored, got defensive numbers. He has jumped up considerably. I think he's got top 150 upside at a minimum. Reggie Bullock, Stan Johnson, Luke Kennard. These are the wings in Detroit. I believe in Kennard a lot. I'm not all that high on believing in Stan Johnson or Reggie Bullock, Bullock was really good last season. But I think Brown can come in and be a rotation guy pretty much straight away. And you know, he showed that he's... that his freshman year is more indicative of what he can be rather than that injury-riddled sophomore season in Miami. At 23, his Miami teammate, Lonnie Walker, the fourth of the San Antonio Spurs. He's dropped a few slots here. My worry with him in the draft was he didn't do much apart from score, and that really didn't change too much in summer league. He was inefficient. He didn't take great shots. He doesn't do very much else. There was an opportunity perhaps in San Antonio if Kawhi Leonard was going to go, that he was going to get a bigger run. But then they brought back DeMar DeRozan playing his exact position. Yes, Danny Green left. But DeRozan is obviously significantly younger than Danny Green and is going to be there longer, meaning there's more of an impediment to Lonnie Walker getting big minutes. And yeah, while he does still have some upside, I'm not totally sold on his complete fantasy game. At 24, a guy that's risen up a lot there. I was well down on Grayson Allen, but he showed many different things in what we saw from him at Duke. His passing ability, his defense was much, much improved in a professional environment. So I've got him at pick number 24. Probably not going to see huge amounts of court time with ravishing Rick Rubio there. Of course, the Don, Donovan Mitchell, Jingling Joe Ingles, recently re-signed Dante Exum. But I think Grayson is ahead of could be ahead of Alec Burks already, and he could actually play ahead of Dante despite that contract that the Jazz signed him to. So a real step up from Grayson Allen there to be at pick number 24. Pick number 25 through 28 now. A guy we didn't see at Summer League, and he has dropped quite a bit in my rankings, and that's maybe a little bit harsh on me. And based on some conversations I've been having recently, I'm probably a little bit low here on Kevin Huerta at pick number 25. There's a chance that he gets some decent minutes here for the Hawks this season as they try to develop the Huerta young backcourt. Yeah, Bazemore's there, but you all know what I think of Kent Bazemore as a player. Tyler Dorsey's nothing great. DeAndre Bembry has really struggled in his first two seasons. So I think there's an opportunity here for Huerta, but he needs to be able to bring some rebounding and steals numbers. But one thing he's got going for him in a fantasy point of view is he does handle the ball and he can get assists and he can make passes. I think he's got probably top 120, top 100 type upside, but it could go sky high, especially if he can develop into a 20-point per game scorer on high efficiency, then add 4 assists. That's top 50. So I think I might be a little bit low on Huerta, and reconsidering it, maybe I have him ahead of Grayson and Lonnie and Bruce and The Rock DJ and Okoji and Ali Okobo. He could very easily be a top 20 guy again, based on some conversations I've been having about Huerta. But at the moment, I've got him at 25, but don't be afraid to go a little bit earlier on him. 26 is Isaac Bonga. He's very, very raw. But again, wing players who can handle the ball and generate assists, and a lot of his advanced projections come out quite well. It's going to be a long time coming for Isaac Bonga. He is on the Lakers this season. Don't expect anything this year or probably next year. He's dropped down a couple of spots here, but this is a long-term investment that could pay off with a couple of maybe an Andre Iguodala-type seasons from Isaac Bonga. At pick number 27. Flaming Mo Wagner, another of the LA Lakers. He has jumped a lot. I had him very, very low, but the way the Lakers free agency has panned out, he looks like he's going to be getting minutes immediately. There's JaVale McGee, there's Ivica Zubac. Wagner's a guy that can score. Now, his block rate and steal rate was absolutely through the roof in Summer League, nowhere near what he did through 2 years at Michigan. Actually, I think it's 2 years or 3 years at Michigan, whatever. It was more than 1 year, and the numbers in Summer League made no sense in comparison to that. So we're talking 6 games versus 40 games, 80 games, whatever it was he played in that stretch at Michigan. So I don't necessarily believe that those sort of numbers are going to hold up, but he looked solid. He looked like he can be okay. I don't think he's got top 60 or top 70 type upside here, but he's going to have an opportunity to play almost immediately. So that's big for Flaming Mo. At 28 is Anthony Simons, a guy we didn't see play at all last season, went to IMG. But he looked solid. Now, he generated nothing assist-wise, but he scored well, he shot well, he defended well, and he has jumped up 19 spots in my rankings up to number 28, a guy that if they look to move on from CJ McCollum at some point could be looking at being a starter in 2 or 3 years' time, and being a player who does have that top 110, top 120 upside. So a guy to look at there at that later stages there. I thought he was definitely impressive during his time in Summer League. Let's get on to the next bunch of guys. At 29, it's Rowdy Rodions Kurix. He's dropped a few spots here. Again, just mainly because of the way the Nets are bringing in this depth in that front court. He does have really nice statistical translations. Didn't do much in Europe last season because of the way that Barcelona handles players who are going to be heading to the NBA. They think if you're going to the NBA, we are just not going to play you. So that happened with the other Nets stash, Alexander Vezenkov, happened to Rowdy Rodions as well. So that don't look too much into the lack of playing time in Barcelona for Kurucs. because that is a deliberate ploy from Barcelona. If someone wants to go to the NBA, they basically just say, screw you, we're not going to play you. You don't care about Barcelona. You're only using us as a stepping stone. And that's exactly what they did with Kurucs and Vezenkov last season. So Rowdy at 29, I think he's got some pretty decent upside there. Javon Carter, I've got at number 130. Now, when I did my initial Dynasty rookie ranks, I actually accidentally left Javon Carter out of those. I would have had him about 23, 24. Now he comes in at number 30. He struggled in Summer League. He looked overwhelmed. The defensive pressure, the shooting stuff that we hoped wasn't quite there. But getting that those steals, being able to generate assists can be a valuable skill. Of course, Mike Conley's ahead of him in Memphis, but he could initially slot in to be a backup point guard on this team and have some sneaky value at times. So while he has fallen, I still like him at pick 30 ahead of his actual NBA draft spot. At pick 31, Kata Bates-Diop moved up a couple of spots here. His abilities of what he was able to do at Ohio State translated to Vegas. A triple one type of guy, steals, blocks, and threes, maybe even a triple one and a half guy with what he was able to do. Rebounded well, but much like Josh Okogie, he's not going to play. Taj Gibson, Gorgie Jang ahead of him in Minnesota. Karl Anthony Towns, of course. Are they going to play Bates-Diop at the three? Well, maybe Thibodeau would. Most other coaches wouldn't. And it's going to take a while for him to get there if he ever does. But I was impressed with what I saw from him at Summer League. It mirrored what he did at Ohio State. So that all adds up. So I like Kata Bates-Diop there at pick 31. At pick 32 is Jacob Evans of the Golden State Warriors. He has dropped down a lot, 11 spot fall from him. He was shitful at Summer League, just looked lost, looked hesitant. He's not going to be playing minutes for the Warriors, really. I thought he could step into a Patrick McCaw role this season. McCaw still unsigned, likely to go back to Golden State. But with what he showed, he's not going to be getting minutes at all for the Warriors. He could move into an Andre Iguodala-light type of situation. Good defensive guy, passing, shoots some threes, rebounds, steals, that sort of stuff. My confidence is really shook in Jacob Evans. You still believe in the talent you saw in college and what he could do there and some of that statistical translational stuff. But man, he was shit in Vegas and in Sacramento as well. So that's why he has fallen there. Really not impressive in the slightest. Let's go on to the next group of guys. Another Lakers player who has risen here at pick 33 is Sfi Mikhailiuk, who was very, very far down in my original rankings list. He's not the next Klay Thompson. I don't think he is, as many Lakers fans tend to claim. He shot the ball very, very well. But what else is he able to do? Now, I was impressed with what he was able to do defensively. He, despite his short arms, he was able to play well there. But can he rebound and get assists and steals and blocks and score in enough volume? I think that's probably going to be tough for Mikhailiuk, but he definitely does get a significant bump up from where he was before because he looks like an NBA rotation player. And probably he should be playing ahead of Lance Stephenson as early as this season. But whether that happens or not, who knows? Because we know Magic Johnson's got his eye on the playoffs, and that apparently means get Lance Stephenson in. At pick 34, it's Khyree Thomas of the Detroit Pistons. I think he's got top 150 upside. He has dropped a few spots here, but that's mainly due to guys like Bates-Diop, like Flaming Mo, like Anthony Simons, like Grayson Allen jumping ahead of him. I still think he's solid. The Shark, Bruce Brown, I think is probably a better bet than Khyree at this stage. But think of Khyree Thomas as potentially a Marcus Smart type of a player, and that you should be pretty happy with that. Chandler Hutchison comes in at 35. Yeah, he was okay at Summer League. Didn't really do massive amounts, but you still saw that wing creation assists. Think Joe Ingles, that sort of a player. Whether Hutchison gets there or not, I'm not sure. The Bulls obviously invested unwisely in Jabari Parker to play the small forward position, limiting what Hutchison and Nahamed Denzel Valentine can do this season. So that takes a little bit away from what Hutchison can do. And at 36, I've got Jared Vanderbilt, who has dropped four spots. He didn't play in Summer League, injured last season in Kentucky. Minutes are going to be very tough for him to come by in Denver. This is a future investment pick. The rebounding rate was out of control for him from Kentucky. The shooting was out of control in a bad direction. But his defensive abilities, the rebounding stuff, and if the offense comes along at all, then this is probably going to be a steal pick here. But it's a long way away from actually happening for Jared Vanderbilt. At pick 37, Aaron Holiday jumped up nine spots here in my ranks. I wasn't massively into him before Summer League. I thought he looked much better than I anticipated, but I'm still not sure he's an NBA starter caliber player. You could easily make the argument you could have him ahead of Vanderbilt and Hutchison and Thomas and Svi and Evans and Bates Diop and Javon Carter, and you could very easily have him as a top 26 type of a player. I understand that. I'm just not totally sold on Aaron Holiday. Defensively, I think there could be an issue. He did generate steals in Summer League, shot the ball well, passed well. I'm not sure that the Pacers are looking at him as a starting point guard. He won't contribute much this year. Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Tyreek Evans, Victor Oladipo, they're your four guards. So Holiday's going to be behind those ones. And I'm not fully into him, but I have my impression of him has improved. Another guy who's jumped up a lot, 16 spots at number 38 now, is Gary Trent Jr. I think that he does have top 120 upside just for being able to be a hopefully an efficient three-point shooter. Whether he can bring more to his game than that remains to be seen, and that will, you know, impact whether he gets that level or even higher. But this is, again, one we're looking at a few years down the track when Dame, when CJ are gone or, you know, getting past their prime. Seth Curry won't be there. Maybe he can pair with Anthony Simons in the backcourt. He needs to develop more, but I was relatively impressed with what Trent was able to do. At pick 39, it's Jerome Robinson. Obviously, I hated that as a lottery pick. Many people disagree with me. I put out a poll yesterday. I thought it was interesting that over the last 12 drafts, between the picks 9 and 15, there has been at least an NBA caliber starter picked in that range, and in most cases, one or sometimes two all-star type players in that 9 to 15 range over the last 12 drafts, as far as I went back. So someone in that range is going to, not necessarily, but someone in that range is going to be pretty good. There's a few options there. Who's it going to be? Last year we had Donovan Mitchell, we had Devin Booker there. We've had Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Kemba Walker. It's many different, Gordon Hayward, Andre Drummond, many guys in this range. Robinson was pick 13. I put out a poll yesterday. Which of these guys do you, in this range between 9 and 15, do you think will become this star? And a few people said Jerome Robinson. I don't see it at all. I wasn't impressed with him at Summer League. I wasn't impressed with the draft pick. I'm not impressed by his fantasy ability. Yeah, he takes shots and he can score, but what else is he going to do? He can't defend, doesn't assist, doesn't rebound, inefficiency. Hit threes, definitely. And again, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I think is considerably behind, where are the minutes coming this season? Now, it might happen in the future. I'm not a believer in Jerome Robinson. At 40, Yusuf Sanon. He's dropped a few spots here in the ranks. Not going to play for the Wizards this season. This is a future investment, but he's a high steal generating guy, a point guard who can get assists. I think he's got some high upside in the right situation, but getting to that level is probably going to be a little bit of a tough ask for Sanon. But at this point, you're taking a guy who does have some upside, and that's where I view Yusuf at this sort of a range. The next group of guys at 41, the burner, Jalen Brunson. I thought he struggled the majority of times for Dallas. So he's dropped 12 spots here in the rankings. Of course, with Yogi Ferrell moving on, he's more likely to get a role this season. There is still Dennis Smith, JJ Barea, and Luka Doncic, and Wes Matthews in that backcourt. And Brunson, translated pretty well coming out of Villanova. I'm just not sure he's going to be an NBA caliber player, unfortunately for him. At 42, Landry Shamet. Does have some pretty decent upside. Dropped 6 spots here. Didn't really blow me away in Summer League. While at 43, Devontae Graham dropped a few spots, dealing with a knee injury, which is a little bit of a concern. But I think that he is an interesting player. Not going to happen this year with Tone Parker backing up Kemba Walker. But Graham could easily work his way into that backup point guard discussion next season and be a top 200 type of a guy. And then you got at 44, the Wizard, Omari Spellman. He's dropped 1 spot there. That maybe is a little bit harsh. You could easily put him ahead of Brunson or Sanon. I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to stay on an NBA court defensively as a big man, and that's the concern. You've got The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, Alex Len, the Baptist, John Collins in Atlanta. He's probably going to be the fourth or fifth big man there this season. And I don't have massive hopes for him, but if there's someone in this group who's going to surprise me, it's probably going to be him. So taking him earlier, I don't think would be a horrendous decision at all. At pick 45, I've got Chimezie Metu, who I thought did pretty well there in San Antonio. Who knows what this Spurs team's going to look like in a couple of years' time? Pau Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, where are they going to be? Could Metu pair with Jakob Poeltl in that front court? I thought Chimezie did pretty well and showed okay. And he's got an okay level of upside, but nothing too spectacular. At pick 46 is Dante DiVincenzo. His summer league was atrocious. He averaged half a point a game. Is he the next Rashad Vaughn, who was another one of those Bucks guards in the teens who was shithouse? Maybe. I'm not massively into DiVincenzo. This is about where I had him pre-summer league, and he's in the same sort of zone there as well. At 47, Melvin Frazier, he fell quite a few spots. He just did not look polished at all. I know that Sam Vecenie and Brian Schroeder were massive fans of Melvin. His defensive ability, his athleticism is crazy. But he just didn't bring anything offensively at all. And I think it's going to be, you know, 3-4 years before we actually see anything out of Melvin Frazier. And I'm not sure how well it's going to translate necessarily to fantasy. At 48 is the first of the undrafted guys, two-way guys, Jalen Adams, a two-way contract player with the Atlanta Hawks. This is exactly where I had him pre-summer league. I got him in the same spot. He looked good out there. Can he move in behind Trae Young at some point and get some backup point guard minutes, even though Jeremy Lin's around? Yeah, I think he can. I'm pretty interested to see. I think he can become an NBA caliber player. So Jalen Adams comes in at pick number 48 for me. The next group of guys at 49, another undrafted two-way player, Alonzo Trier of the New York Knicks. I also had him at 49 pre-summer league. I thought he held his own. This Knicks team needs as much young talent as possible. And Trier could easily come in and be a backup shooting guard for this team as early as this season. So I like that, that spot there for him. At 50, it's Shake Milton. He's fallen quite a few spots. Just didn't really see anything that got me overly excited about Shake. And there are other guys that I would much prefer to have over him at that spot. At 51, a guy that I didn't initially have in my ranks, and that's the Xavier guard, Trevon Blewett, who signed a two-way with the Pelicans. He was excellent in summer league, scored whenever he wanted to, and now has got that two-way contract with them. Getting guard play for the Pelicans has always been key. Yeah, they're playing guards out of position, Etwan Moore up at the three, Drew at the two. I think Blewett could find himself on the roster at some point this season, and be an interesting Jordan Crawford-type microwave bench scorer player. At 52, we've got MC Hamidou Diallo. Stop. Have a time. He's about the same where I had him pre-summer league. He had a few flashes. He had a few shit performances. The Kentucky benefit of the doubt is there. As I said, when I do my initial fantasy projections, it did 160 blokes. He was the 160th guy there, so that was terrible. But, you know, give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt from that Kentucky stuff. And he showed enough there in OKC. The addition from the Thunder of Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot probably pushes Diallo down just a little bit in their overall depth chart. The next group of guys at 53, it's Kostas Antetokounmpo. He's risen a few spots here. We saw the defensive stuff from him. He's on a two-way with the Mavs. You know, good to get himself in the door there and get some sort of a contract. And those defensive numbers, if he's ever forced into a 20-minute per game role for some reason short term, then he's going to be able to get, you know, 1.5 steals and blocks per game. The rest of his game's got a long way to come. But yeah, I'm obviously okay with having him here. At 54, the golf ball, Ray Spalding, another one of the Mavericks guys. I thought he was relatively impressive in summer league, but didn't get one of their two-way contracts, which leaves him a little bit in limbo as to where he's going to play this season. He showed off that he could hit the three. I thought he looked pretty good at that. I thought he probably looked better than Kostas, but the fact that he doesn't have a contract is a little bit of a worrying sign as to where his value goes. At 55 is Trayvon Duval, who had a really strong first game for Houston and then sucked in most of those other ones. This is mainly a pedigree type pick. We know how highly regarded he was coming out of high school, struggled in college. I don't know where it's going to go, but this is just, hey, maybe it turns out. At 56, another guy I didn't have in my initial ranks, Duncan Robinson. He earned himself a two-way contract with the Miami Heat. Looked really, really good for their summer league team. And again, just a guy. And they find these underappreciated players like a Tyler Johnson, like Hassan Whiteside, even like James Johnson, and work them into usable players, Joshy Richardson. So Duncan Robinson, I think, is an interesting pick. And he found himself on a pretty strong team in the Heat, or at least a good situation for him to be able to develop. At 57, a guy that's risen a few spots there is Elise Johnson. He has signed a contract with the Pacers, so he'll be on their roster. Of course, he's behind Domantas Sabonis and Thad Young and Miles Turner and the cock monster Kylo Quinn, so he's not going to get much playing time this year, but I thought his summer league was strong. He rebounded well, and you know, that's good enough where he could potentially have some top 250 seasons, which in deeper dynasty leagues has value. At 58, it's Justin Jackson, the Orlando Magic variety. He is worse than the other Justin Jackson from Sacramento, who I don't think is very good. I wasn't impressed at all with Justin Jackson in summer league, and 58 is maybe a little bit too high. 59 is Gary Clark, who's on a two-way with the Rockets. He's one of these guys that a lot of the translational stuff looks really, really good for him. So that's why I've got him here. The opportunity for him to play is pretty much minimal. Like, it's not there. But much like Isaiah Hartenstein, who probably gets himself a Rockets contract this year, he translated really well last season. So I took him in quite a few dynasty drafts and just sat him on the bench and see where it goes. That's what I've been doing with Gary Clark. The opportunity is not going to be there initially. But when that translational stuff is there, hey, at pick 59, why not take a flyer on someone like this? At 60, Kenrick Williams. Surprised he didn't get drafted. Thought he looked really solid coming out of TCU. He was shithouse in summer league. I've dropped him significantly. He doesn't have a team. Could have been way off on him. Still got him at 60, but yeah, not looking great for big old Kenrick Williams. The next group of guys here at 61, Kevin Hervey for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Maybe he can have a top 200 season at some point. I don't have too much faith in that. 62 is an interesting player, Yuta Watanabe, who played for the Nets in summer league but has signed a two-way with the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis used their two-way spots a lot last season. Memphis may not be good again. Watanabe could have top 250 potential as early as this season on that Memphis team. So he's someone to watch, as is the Cleveland Cavaliers two-way guy, Billy Preston at pick 63. I thought he did okay in summer league, didn't do massive amounts, but enough to make me go, all right, I'm going to include him in my rankings. He wasn't there initially, neither was Watanabe. So I think Billy Preston's an interesting two-way guy to have a look at. At 64, it's Vince Edwards of the Houston Rockets. Didn't really impress me too much in summer league at all, much like most of these other guys didn't, given how far down the rankings list they are. At number 65, Thomas Welsh of the Denver Nuggets. They've got him on a two-way. They elevated Monty Morris and Torrey Craig from two-ways to full-time contracts this year. So Thomas Welsh is on one of those. He didn't really do much to get me too excited, nor did Tony Carr of the New Orleans Pelicans. He's dropped 11 spots down to 66. I thought that he was bad in summer league. His athleticism and athleticism testing at the combine is a real worry. I don't have very much faith in Tone Carr there at all. 27 is Devon Hall of the Thunder. He's dropped 10 spots there as well due to a few of these two-way guys jumping up, like Watanabe and Preston, Lee's Johnson jumping ahead of him as well. Didn't really give me any sort of level of excitement at all. And Arnoldas Kuboka comes in at 68. He's dropped a few slots. He's going back to Europe this season. Great first game for the Hornets, and then I think scored about 1 point in the next three or four games. I still think he can be okay, but obviously I don't have massively high hopes for Arnoldas Kuboka. And the last group of guys, 69 through to 72.
Giggity!
At 69, Rolly Alkins, who I thought played pretty well for Toronto. The Bulls snagged him on a two-way contract. They've elevated Antonio Blakeney. I think Alkins plays this season and could have a decent role. He's a very interesting player. I did these rankings actually before Alkins signed that two-way with the Bulls. I could easily jump him ahead of Welsh and Carr and Edwards and then Kevin Hervey and Kenrick Williams, and I probably would. So he's probably a little bit low here, Rolly Alkins. At 70, it's Deng Adel. I thought he played very well for the Houston Rockets. Not contracted anywhere. He is an Australian guy. Played for Louisville last season. I thought he acquitted himself well. It might be a couple of years away, but some strong performances from Deng Adel. At 71, Kendrick Nunn. Loved what he did for the Warriors. Probably deserves a two-way contract spot with that team. Maybe in that Quinn Cook mold, can score and can be a useful player. And at 72, the last guy on my rankings is Georgie King. I don't think he's an NBA player. I don't think he's even close to an NBA player. So he comes in at pick number 72. That does it for my Dynasty Rookie Ranks. Just a quick announcement, guys. During the season, I am going to be doing a Dynasty-only podcast. It's going to be at least once a week. Probably going to be twice a week. What we're going to be talking about is, if you remember last season, we did the player spotlights. It's going to be incorporating those. We're going to be incorporating dynasty questions from you guys. We're going to be incorporating dynasty trade answers and scenarios also. It'll be one to two shows a week, a few player spotlights, some trade questions, some discussions, some setting stuff, a whole bunch of stuff on a specific dynasty only podcast. It'll remain on this feed, so you'll see it there. But just remember, that will be coming this season. So that's a change that will be happening. If you do like this podcast, go and leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Do it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify as well. And on YouTube, smash subscribe, thumbs up me, and leave a comment below. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, on Instagram at @RedRock_Beeble. Thank you to Elliot and Jeff.
My name is Jeff.
For their work on Instagram and Facebook, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dwight Howard.